Well, you and I are lucky to live in a state where we have such a diversity of wildlife. I think it's just one of the great things about Wisconsin. And one of the reasons I like to talk about it at least a couple times a month here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today. And who better to talk about it than our two guests, David Drake, David, wildlife specialist with UW Extension, associate professor in the Department of Forest and Wildlife Ecology. David, welcome back.
Thank you very much, Larry.
Jamie Knack, wildlife outreach specialist in the Department of Forest and Wildlife Ecology, back once again as well. And Jamie, great to see you too.
Hey, it's great to be back.
We have lots of things we can talk about. And as you listen in today, you've got something about our Wisconsin wildlife you would like to talk about, give us a call. Maybe you've got an unusual sighting or a question or maybe an experience to share. 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You know, we've talked about the urban wildlife with you two before, especially about the foxes living on the UW-Madison campus. And I know you have an update on some of the efforts to learn more about those. And why don't we start with that?
All right, we sure will. Well, thanks, Larry. Yeah, so we are doing, as we've talked about before, some urban wildlife research here. And, you know, about 85% of Americans are living in urban areas these days. So that's where most of the people are interacting with wildlife, having both good and bad interactions. And there's surprisingly a good diversity of wildlife that lives in those urban areas. And two species that in particular that we're kind of focusing on in this research project are coyotes and red fox. And we are live trapping and then putting a tailored or a fitted radio collar to every coyote we catch and every red fox we catch within the city of Madison, and we're tracking them around to see what they're doing. And so we've got some kind of interesting preliminary data right now. You know, the coyotes are
What are they doing?
They're moving around. They are breeding. So we've had some young of the year this year. It's been kind of fun. We've found some fox dens and coyote dens in the city, and that's been fun to watch. But, you know, the coyotes, what we've found so far is that they're not moving nearly as much as the red fox are, and they seem to be staying pretty tight to those urban green spaces within the city of Madison. So they're still in that urbanized area, but they're staying in parks and open green spaces and things like that. And the fox, on the other hand, seem to be much more of an urban animal and are, you know, sleeping next to the foundation of people's houses and walking down the middle of State Street here in Madison and have a much further range. So we've had a fox that's moved, you know, over 7 miles. And so we're getting a sense that that maybe there are not as many red fox in the city as we thought there were, since they're moving such great distances.
Sure.
That they would be, if there were a lot of fox, they would be traversing across other foxes' territories. And that probably would be frowned upon by those foxes occupying the territory. So that's some of the things we're thinking about and looking at. It's been kind of a fun study so far. And again, we'll start trapping here starting this fall and then trap through most of the winter. And so we've got a Facebook page. If you're on Facebook, you can go to UW Urban Canid Project. Google search those words on Facebook and they'll come up. We just started a website to go along with the project, and that's uwurbancanidproject.weebly.com. And on that website, we've got what's called an iNaturalist page. So we're asking the public, and we have been for a long time, but we're doing it more formally now, asking the public to report sightings of fox and coyotes in the city of Madison. And so you can go on our Facebook page, and you can there's a button, Report a Sighting, and you can log in on our iNaturalist page, and then we're mapping all these sightings. And that's also helping us document where these animals are. And then the other thing we're doing we have started a donate here button. It costs us about $50,000 a year to do this research. So we're always struggling to get money, and we decided, and we've got a lot of people interested and always asking us how to help. And so we finally said, well, one of the ways to help is donate money. So
throw
a few bucks. So we've established a University of Wisconsin Foundation gift account, which is tax deductible. So if you go to our webpage, you can see the donate here button, and you can donate to our project financially if you wish to do that. And then the UW Foundation will send you a tax deductible receipt you can report in your IRS statement. So we've got some things going on. It's been fun and continuing to be fun, and we continue to invite the public into our research. So if you want to start coming with us trapping, this winter, you're welcome to do that. Or we're tracking these animals once a week. You're welcome to come out tracking with us. And
how do they do that? I mean, have to contact where...
Yep. So if you go to our Facebook or our website page, there's some information there. Or we have a Gmail address, which is, again, uwurbancanidproject@gmail.com. And my graduate student monitors that, and then he'll schedule you in for trapping this winter or weekly tracking any time of the year.
And, you know, speaking of tracking and watching, there's Operation Deer Watch as well. That's something the DNR is doing, though, right?
It is. So it's an ongoing effort to include the public, to have the public have an input in Wisconsin's deer management and to help monitor and evaluate the deer herd. So it's an annual citizen science survey opportunity called Operation Deer Watch. And for the months of August and September, so from August 1st to September 30th, they're asking the public to record daily observations that can be tracked. You can either enter your data right online, which is phenomenal. It goes right into their system. They don't have to retype it. Or you can print out a PDF data sheet and log your information there. And then basically what they're asking for is for you to record the number of bucks, does, and fawns that you see as you're driving around. And there are some guidelines for conducting the survey that you can find on the DNR's website. But this is not just a survey that hunters can contribute to, but this is for
anybody,
non-hunters
yeah.
as well. It's for anybody. And in fact, this is something over the past couple summers that I've gotten my daughters interested in doing, or as a family we've done, is just kind of keep that clipboard with the data sheet in the vehicle. And as you're driving around, make some recordings of what you're seeing. So if you
Very
see a doe,
cool.
how many fawns are with her, if any? And as I said, they're interested in reports for the bucks as well. And at this time of the year, bucks are... Their antler growth is pretty much finished. They're about as big yeah. as they're going to be. They'll shed that velvet yet. But so it's a great time to be outside, and the deer seem to be really visible with their reddish-brown coats against the green
yeah.
background. So, again, I encourage everybody to participate. And if you want more information, just go to the DNR's website and type in Deer Watch.
And so Jan, who sent us a Facebook comment, which is pretty cool, she said, yesterday in Chippewa Falls, I saw two does and two fawns in a backyard that bumps up to a forest. One of the fawns was drinking out of a bird bath. That
yeah,
was very
so
sweet.
That's
so
very
she
sweet.
Could post
and
that.
And she could enter that information right online or continue to collect it and enter it all at one time at the end of September. So, yeah, that's the exact type of information that the state is looking for.
And again, where's that at? That's at... we have it up on our Facebook.
Yep, it'll be up on Larry's Facebook, but also just the Department of Natural Resources website. And then keyword will be Deer Watch.
Patty in Oregon has a comment, so let's go there. Patty, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry, and hi to your guests. I had a really interesting experience last week near Manitowish Waters. I was doing this wolf howl thing through the Northwoods Discovery Center, and it was in the evening about 8 o'clock at night, and we were really down some pretty wild roads, mostly logging roads and things. And we were at this boat landing, and I heard this kind of chatter squeaking sound. And a minute later, a dark brown creature ran across my foot, and I saw it when it moved behind me. I looked behind me, and it looked to be a young pine marten. Do we have pine martens up there?
Yeah, Patty, that's a great question, and you are in the right place of the state to see them.
Yeah.
We absolutely have pine martens here in the state of Wisconsin. It's been kind of an interesting management issue. So pine martens are a native species to Wisconsin, and you were describing walking down this logging road. So pine martens, and then there's another animal up there, fishers, that are both kind of medium-sized mammals, and they're associated with old-growth forests. So they need interior old growth forest habitats with big trees, big round trees, and then a sufficient amount of downed dead timber on the ground that they use to find their prey, such as small mammals, voles, chipmunks, things like that. And then they'll use those great big standing trees that have cavities in them as nesting areas or just resting areas. And so with the martens, pine martens, that population has been reintroduced into Wisconsin to try to boost a struggling population here. And unfortunately, the population has not been doing as well as the fisher population that is also another associated population with that old-growth forest. Fishers do very well in Wisconsin, and they do prey or they eat pine martens, so that's one of the problems with the pine marten population. But the DNR and some researchers in our department are trying to unravel exactly what is going on with the pine marten population and why they can't quite get a strong foothold in the state to have a sustainable population.
Well, it certainly looked what I know a pine marten to look like. Oh. And not only did it run across my foot, but it stood behind my foot and almost crawled up my leg.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was the same one. Is this unusual behavior?
It is a little bit unusual behavior. So just to make sure, it is a pine marten. So those animals are maybe, I don't know, 10, 15 pounds. They're, you know, from, if you look at just their body, they maybe be a foot and a half long, and you add their tail on, is another foot or so. Kind of a light brownish, maybe a kind of a bit of a gray animal. And then if you look at their throat, they typically would have kind of a fiery orange or a reddish throat patch on that. So is that what you think you saw?
It sounds like what I saw. I definitely saw the throat patch. And these were young ones.
Yep.
So they were not that long. I'd say it was maybe 8 to 12 inches long.
Okay, but it wasn't a squirrel.
Oh, it positively was in the weasel family.
Okay, yep. All so right. It was probably a pine marten. And,
yeah.
And you know, the fact that they're young may be the reason they got so close to you. They're just not quite sure yet. They're not experienced about who to stay away from and the dangers out there in the woods and things like that. But what a neat experience.
Yeah.
Well, and I was just going to add, Patty, if you're pretty confident in that observation, you could either call the local DNR wildlife biologist, or there's a rare mammal sighting form on the DNR's website that you could report that observation. And especially if you think there were young, that would be something worth noting.
Yeah.
And I guess the other thing I don't know if you were near water at all, but a mink would be of similar size and also have a throat patch. And when they have young, they're pretty inquisitive, too, and are likely to stick around. In fact, when I've done some summer programming for children here in the Madison area, we've on a couple of occasions encountered a mink family, and they tend to stick around and are very curious and give us a pretty good view. So I'm just thinking of other possibilities, not that it wasn't, but just, you know, it's a very rare animal in the state. It's our only endangered mammal. Yep. So
it is. But a mink would be, you know, typically
near
mink are near water, but they're also typically more all black, and they've got a white chin patch, and it's a much smaller chin patch than would a fisher have, that bright orange chin patch. And so typically a mink's going to be a darker pelt or pelage than the marten would be.
Yeah,
I have to say that I'm pretty sure it was a pine marten. It wasn't all dark. And on Monday, I was at a friend of mine on the west side of Madison and saw a mink.
Oh, good.
Right outside her
face. Well, you've seen them both recently then. But yeah, I would encourage you to report that.
Yeah, please do.
I will.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much for calling. It is interesting with young. I can remember, you know, pileated woodpeckers are not typically, you're not going to get all that close to them all the time. But when we were in Peninsula State Park, there was a mom and a dad and two young pileateds, and they were very curious. And the mother and the father weren't as happy with their two little ones.
Yeah, they were like, "Let's go.
Let's get out of here." Right. But they would get right down on the ground. Yep. I had them a foot away.
Yeah, it's kind of like a teenage human driver. They don't always use the best judgment.
Oh, right. That's it. You can join in too. What's your judgment like? What are your questions about wildlife here in the state? I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Miller Show. We had a caller, another caller from Greene County. Jan wondered about the harm that skunks can do. I know people who try to trap skunks, and I don't understand why. And just as I have a friend who lives over on the east side of Madison, who has a family of skunks in her underneath the shed in her back, and she's just kind of, I mean, there's four, I think, little ones.
Yeah.
She's actually, I think, enjoying watching them play and stuff.
Yeah, I guess it's all relative, right? So so skunks, amongst all the animals out there, they do very little harm. So some people don't are not happy with skunks because they will kind of root around in your yard, especially when there's larvae of insects that are burrowing in your soil. They'll root around for those larvae and eat the larvae out of your soil. But that leaves little divots in the lawn, which are temporary, and typically those go away on their own. So that's that's an issue some people have. Skunks are a relatively common carrier of rabies amongst all the wildlife species we have in Wisconsin, especially the mammalian wildlife species. So there's an issue with that. The biggest issue is people don't like them around simply because of the possibility of getting sprayed, either you or if you've got a pet animal. But if you don't mind them being there, there's absolutely nothing wrong with having that skunk in your yard or in your area, and we'd encourage you to just let the animal be. If you do want to trap it for whatever reason, typically using a live trap is the way to go, and you just bait that live trap with a can of wet cat food. And then the question is, well, what do I do once I catch a skunk, if I actually catch one? So you have to be careful. And you want to make sure the skunk is aware that you've caught it. Or, I'm sorry, the skunk knows it's caught, obviously, but you want to make sure the skunk is aware that you're coming toward the trap. So you want to make quiet noises so the skunk sees you. And then if you move quietly and slowly, you can cover that trap with burlap or a blanket or something like that. And once you've enclosed that trap with in darkness, typically that skunk will settle down, and then you can move that trap wherever you want. And so you're welcome to release the animal, but if you do release it on property you don't own, that you need to have the permission of that property owner prior to releasing the animal.
Talking about the wonderful world of Wisconsin wildlife today, with David Drake and Jamie Dack of the Department of Forest and Wildlife Ecology at UW-Madison and UW Extension. I'm Larry Mueller. Cheyenne Lentz, our on-air producer today here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Right now we're having a lot of fun talking with Jamie Dack and David Drake of the Department of Forest and Wildlife Ecology about the world of wildlife here. Again, join in at 800-642-1234. Love to hear from you. Anne in Madison up next. Anne, thanks for calling.
Hi. I have kind of an odd question. I walk my dog in the mornings, and I have noticed like a musky smell on trees and bushes that will walk by. We live near the Arboretum, and we've definitely seen coyotes, and one time my husband had seen a fox at night, and I don't know if like those guys could be marking around our neighborhood or if it's just my nose.
Ann, that's a good question. So when you say musky, is it like a skunk or in the kind of the weasel family, that mustelid type odor, or is it more of an odor like a urine type smell?
Well, I guess it's in the skunkier range.
So coyotes and foxes will certainly mark territory, as will many different animals. I mean, deer do that, and skunks and all sorts of different animals will mark territory. So it could be a wide variety of things, and there's a lot of things out there at the Arboretum, especially skunks, coyote, fox included, that call the Arboretum home. So it could be a variety of different things out there, or it could be all of them. Frankly.
But, okay.
Yeah, that's a good question.
Yeah.
But if you have a sighting, certainly report it, if you don't mind, to our iNaturalist page, especially if it's a sighting of a fox or a coyote. And you can find that on our UW Urban Canid Project website.
Mm-hmm. There we go.
My husband has definitely seen, he sees more critters than I do because he walks a lot earlier in the morning.
Yeah. Great. Well, thank
you
so much, Ann.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Let's go back to Facebook. There's more interesting photos on Facebook. Here's one from Drake Sen of a rough grouse nest. And there's a video of it as well, of the nest. And he said, Mom was on the nest for around a month and then hatched over the course of 3 days on Memorial Day weekend. The chicks were mobile within a few hours. The cabin is a Wisconsin Coverts contributor property, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah, so I remember Drake well. He went through the Wisconsin Coverts Project Workshop, which is a private landowner workshop that we coordinate through the Department of Forest and Wildlife Ecology with a number of sponsors, including the Rough Grouse Society. And Drake went through that program a number of years ago. The rough grouse are becoming, the chicks are pretty good size now, same with turkey poults, and really feeding heavily on insects and boosting their protein, and are getting to the point within the next few weeks, early September, where they'll be able to fly and start scattering about. So great pictures.
Great photos. Tim Malik sent one of this is very cool, of a young woodchuck. This is taken between Maplewood and Forestville, climbing about halfway up a tree.
Yep,
it's amazing. I was going to say the same thing. A lot of people don't realize that woodchucks can climb, and they
are
very,
picture.
Very good climbers.
Yep, they're very adept at climbing.
Yeah, and so actually, I tell you what, those are some great photos.
Yeah.
If you have a wildlife photo, Wisconsin wildlife photo, I hope you'll post it up on our Facebook page. Just go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. You can post there. Someone else posted a photo of a really large cat. Treva Davis and wondered if it was a house cat. And it looks like a very, very large house cat.
Yeah, it looks like a tiger-colored tabby
that could go on a diet.
Yeah.
You can see the long tail that parallels the back leg, so bobcat would have a much shorter tail and coloration
it's
hefty. It looks like it's eating well.
Looks like Tiger, my oldest cat.
Yeah.
It looks like Robert and DePere, thanks for waiting. Hi. Robert, are you there?
Yeah, hello. Hi. I didn't expect to be live. I thought they were going to play the question that I asked. So the young lady mentioned the phone.
All right. Go ahead and ask your question.
Hi. When I was a child, I grew up in Milwaukee near Kalsey Park or Kosciuszko Park. And in the lagoon there, they had these large tortoises. And I remember we would go there for picnics or 4th of July celebrations, and they would just be walking around on the sidewalk. And I'm wondering, was that something that the Wisconsin DNR put there, or the county program, or was somebody just put them there? Because they're obviously not there now. I'm wondering where they came from.
I wonder if they were turtles.
Yeah, well, it's an interesting question.
They probably were turtles.
Okay. Okay, so we have 12 different species of turtles in Wisconsin. So if you felt like they were free range or wild, that in other words, they weren't being held captive in that particular park, then there are 12 different species of Wisconsin turtles that we could be looking at. Just thinking,
but these were huge.
Yeah, so thinking size wise and the habitat, we're probably most likely snapping turtles. And one of the things you could do is look online at snapping turtle pictures, but their heads are very large. They have a very formidable beak in the front to be able to feed on prey. And I think if you look at that picture, it will, that should help with the identification, because the other 11 species of turtles don't have a head shape like that. And there's only a few others that get to be of fairly large size in terms of their shell size. And that would not be probably a very likely spot for the other species.
I think snapping turtles. Go online, take a look at a photo of them. It's almost like a prehistoric looking
head. They do.
Head,
isn't you don't want to mess with them.
They can get pretty big.
Don't stick your finger in their mouth.
No.
Oh, man. Thanks again, Robert. Appreciate it. Jocelyn in Sheboygan, it's your turn next. Hi, thank you for calling.
Yes, hi, good afternoon. I have a question and a comment. My question is the trapping of coyotes and foxes. In the urban, what end is that? I mean, what is the goal of the research that you're doing?
Sure.
Yep, that's a good question, Jocelyn. So we've got a couple of different objectives. One is to, from a more ecological or academic standpoint, we want to understand the competition between coyote and red fox in the city or in these urbanized areas. And so typically if a coyote catches a red fox out in the wild, it will kill that animal. And we're not seeing coyote predation, or we don't think we're seeing coyote predation on red fox in these urbanized areas. So we want to understand how that competition dynamic is occurring here. We're also collecting a bunch of health data on these animals. So we're looking at wildlife diseases and the spread of diseases from unvaccinated domestic dogs to the wild canids, and also from the wild canids to domestic dogs. And then we're also trying to get a better sense about the general and peak activity patterns and movements of these animals to try to proactively head off conflict between fox, coyote, humans and domestic animals, be it dogs, cats, backyard chickens, whatever the case might be.
And we should also, I think she was asking also about the trapping itself.
Yep.
It's you know, the animals are not harmed.
No, nope. We trap them live because we want to keep them alive so we can put a radio collar on them and follow them around for the life of the animal. And so we have every interest in keeping these animals alive, and we've got their welfare and you know, their health forefront in our mind. And so we do everything we can to live trap them, and so far, I don't know, we've caught maybe 15 animals, and we haven't lost one so far, so
yeah.
Knock on wood.
And really nothing, they were not damaged.
No, not at all. So we have a animal care use protocol that's been approved by the University of Wisconsin, and we've got a Wisconsin Department of Natural Resource research permit. And so we've got all the necessary permits to do this. We work with certified veterinarians to help us anesthetize the animals and things like that. So absolutely, we take as good a care of these animals as we possibly can.
I was kind of worried about what the outcome would be because it seems like Wisconsin is not very friendly towards animals in general.
I don't know if I'd agree with that statement. I think there's a lot of very, very passionate people about wildlife here in this state, and there's a lot of people who have a great interest and have a lot of interest in the welfare of the wildlife.
Yeah, and certainly that's what's on at the heart of this research.
Absolutely. Yep.
Well, it's really highlighting these species and drawing attention to them and really serving the public in terms of how they can, because David and I are fielding these questions all the time, you know, on a pretty regular basis, but, you know, how do I interact? I'm concerned about my dog or interacting with these animals. So it's helping us to get information on how these animals are moving and better inform the public.
Mm-hmm. Jocelyn, thanks a lot. Appreciate your call. Good questions. Pam in Kellogg, Minnesota, up next with a question. Hi.
Good morning. I have been busy making sauerkraut all morning, so I hope questions haven't been asked already. And I tell you what, that is a job.
Yeah.
It's easier just to buy the crap. But for several years, we had one red-headed woodpecker that we'd see, and I think it was only one. But the last 2 years, I have not seen it, and I wondered, are their numbers even worse than they had been? And the second question I was wondering was, I heard a few years ago you might open the season on sandhill cranes, and being from Nebraska, I really hope that doesn't happen, but could you answer those two questions?
Sure.
Yep. So just to make sure, it's the red-headed woodpecker. So there are different woodpecker species
that
have red on their head. So you know.
I'm a naturalist. I know my woodpeckers.
Okay, excellent. And apparently you know about kraut, too. So you're a multi-dynamic
yes,
woman.
I do.
Very impressive. So red-headed woodpeckers are kind of an interesting species. They, as you noted in your question, their population kind of started taking a little bit of a nosedive or declined, partly because these animals are associated with what we call oak savanna landscapes. So these are grassy or pasture-type landscapes with dotted trees here and there. And they use those trees to excavate a cavity for nesting. And because that oak savanna landscape, it kind of went by the wayside or was decreasing in years past, that the woodpeckers have gone away, the red-headed woodpeckers have gone away because the habitat has decreased. But one of the things that has brought these animals back are golf courses, of all things, because mm-hmm. golf courses kind of resemble an oak savanna with that open landscape with dotted trees. And now, especially here in southwestern Wisconsin and other parts of the Midwest, there's a lot more interest in restoring prairie and oak savanna landscapes. And with that increase in habitat, the red-headed woodpeckers have come back. And it is an absolute delight to see them if you get a chance. They're still not I'm not sure about the population numbers, but I'm relatively certain that the population numbers have not rebounded to what they used to be, but they are on the rebound, which is a very good thing. And then the only thing I'll say about the sandhill crane hunt is it was proposed a number of years ago. It's been tabled. There's some concerns about, at least here in Wisconsin, a subspecies of sandhill cranes, and the subspecies population is not as strong as the species population, and so there's some concern about making sure that and you can't differentiate the subspecies, so especially over the barrel of a gun. So there's some concern about doing a little bit more research and making sure that if there is a sandhill crane season open in Wisconsin, that is not going to harm the subspecies that is not as strong as, I guess it's the other subspecies or species of sandhill crane. So it's tabled. I think there's more research looking into it, and stay tuned.
Yeah, it's good. It's certainly not going to happen in the next year or two. Tim and Shano, thanks again, Pam, for calling, by the way. Let's turn to Tim and Shano now. Tim, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi there. I just wanted to share an experience I had last week. I was driving, coming out of Manawa on County Road B, and I saw what I, at first I thought it was a fox, and I'm like, no, that's a lot bigger than a fox, and I thought a bobcat or a lynx, and I wasn't sure, really sure what the... What I noticed was the size. It was definitely a calf, and I noticed the large ear tufts. And then I, when I got home, I kind of did a little looking online, and I'm pretty sure I saw a lynx because of the large ear tufts. And I just wanted to confirm that that's correct. If it has the large ear tufts, that was a lynx that I saw.
So Tim, first of all, lynx are pretty rare. They're not breeding in Wisconsin. But they there have been sightings as early as the early 90s and so on. So occasionally there are confirmed sightings either with a roadkill animal or a DNA evidence and things like that. So it's not out of it's not out of possibility. However, bobcats will also have tufts on their ears, and the males can be pretty large in size. And as I said, they can have tufts as well. So you can't use the tuft to distinguish between a lynx and a bobcat.
Okay.
But
all the pictures I saw online of, like, bobcats, I mean, I could see the little bit of points on their ears, but then you look at the pictures of the lynx, and they were very, very prominent, large and facing forward and curling. And, I mean, that's what I noticed about that cat as it ran across the road.
Yeah, so I just know some of the male bobcats will have, pretty good tufts on their ears. But what we typically look at is you'll notice that the lynx has really long, lanky legs and also a much fluffier, soft-appearing coat to it or pelt.
Okay. It was pretty fast as it went across the road.
Yeah, it's hard. It's very hard to make that.
It was real wide for a cat and kind of stocky. So that's...
It's really difficult when they don't stand next to each other and allow us to make that distinction. But, again, it is not out of the realm of possibility. Again, odds and where you are in the state, it's probably more likely to have been a bobcat. But, we can never say never in this world
right.
of wildlife.
Absolutely.
But either way, really cool observation. So
yeah,
thanks
absolutely.
For sharing.
Thanks, Tim. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And we got Ben and La Crosse up next with something interesting. Ben, hi.
Hi. I guess I was calling, I was listening to these sightings and stuff, but I have something I'm just curious about from, in my younger years when I was a young child, I used to go, this would have been in like 1984, 1985, that summer. I used to go to child care at a church, pretty prominent church in La Crosse called St. Pius. Cathedral, or St. Pius, I believe. Anyways, it's on the south side of La Crosse, right along the river there, on the very south end of La Crosse. And I distinctly remember when I was a child that sometimes the girls that attended us and took care of us during the child care would have to pull us out of the sandboxes because there would be these gigantic...
turtles.
Like 30 to 36 inch front to back diameter snapping turtles that were nesting in our toy boxes. They since then have put up a nursing home right next to it, a very large one. This is in 1984 when it was much more rural, just some houses next to St. Pius. But I guess I'm calling I kind of want to confirm that. I've always thought back on that, how large they were, and now that the river has changed. We've lost the clams,
So what's going on there? You have a snapper with a 36 inch?
So 36 would be
big.
A very large turtle.
Yeah,
so I happen to have the Turtles of Wisconsin booklet that you can get from the Department of Natural Resources along, and it the three turtle species that can have the largest shells in the state, snapping turtle, upwards of 16 inches, certainly less than 20. And then we have two species of soft-shell turtles, which in this case, being in La Crosse and on the large river, soft-shell turtles are a possibility. So both the midland smooth or the eastern spiny. So likely, depending on the time of year, they're using that sandbox to deposit their eggs. So those are females coming up from the riverbank to lay eggs. And then they'll just cover them up and leave and wait for them to hatch out. So, you know, obviously when we have memories, it's hard to put things in perspective of size, but no doubt a large turtle, 36 inches would be really large. I would say probably upwards of 20 inches would be kind of the top for those two species.
Yeah, I think I've seen 20.
Yeah.
And that's a big turtle.
That's really big. That's probably, you know, 60, 80-year-old turtle. So, yeah. And just as a side note, we've talked about snapping turtles a couple of times, but towards the end of August here, this is when their eggs are hatching. So be on the lookout. Painted turtles should already have been out in July. So hopefully we'll see some little snapping turtles out.
All right. There we go. Thanks, Ben, for calling. Appreciate it. And Jim and Hudson, thank you for calling. Hi, what's on your mind?
I just have a question, kind of back to the weasel family. I'm originally from Michigan, and as you may know, that's the nickname, the Wolverine State. And I there used to be Wolverines in northern Michigan way back when, and I just wondered if there have ever been any in Wisconsin, and whether there may still be some in Michigan, in the UP, somewhere.
Sure. Well, we don't have any in Wisconsin, do we have any in a zoo?
Oh,
even?
Sure. Yeah, probably. I shouldn't say with certainty, but I would assume potentially the Milwaukee Zoo would be a large enough zoo that would potentially have one. But so, just like Minnesota, Michigan, back in the early during European settlement, Wolverines were native to Wisconsin, and they've been extirpated. So that means they're not extinct. They just no longer occur in this particular state, probably for over 100 years now. So there are no wild wolverines, nor have there been any validated sightings. There was a sighting a couple decades ago of a wolverine, but it was traced back to a captive facility where it had escaped. So, no wild wolverines here, more in states like Montana and Canada, and need more tundra-type habitat.
All right.
More, less human habitation.
Yeah, more contiguous, undisturbed, human disturbance.
Mm-hmm. Yep, thanks, Jim.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Jessica in Reedsburg, hi.
Hi.
And what can we do for you?
Yeah, so my husband and I were driving down the road in northern Sauk County, and we saw a roadrunner literally cross our road. And we're like, is that right? Or are we, we're kind of new to Wisconsin, so we didn't know if those were common or if it was more type of a grouse.
Beep, beep.
David is just
or a sandpiper or something like that.
Yeah. So, Jessica, where are you from?
We're originally from Indiana.
Oh, Indiana. Okay. So, yeah, no, it would be unlikely as a roadrunner, as you would expect to see a roadrunner in the Bugs Bunny, cartoon, or if you go down to Arizona and some of the parts of the arid Southwest, you'll see roadrunners pretty commonly down there. But we do not have roadrunners as a native species of bird here in Wisconsin. So it could have been I'm sorry, what kind of habitat did you say you were driving through?
Northern Sauk County.
Northern Sauk County, so like farmland, maybe a kind of a mixed forest type
farmland.
Area.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it could have been, it might have been a killdeer possibly.
Yeah.
And killdeer are small birds, roughly the size of a roadrunner. They've got two bands around their throat and kind of a tawny colored bird. So that's a possibility. There are some free-ranging quail occasionally in that area. That would be a possibility. Depending on the size, it could even be a young turkey. Sometimes they have late nests, and so it could be a very young turkey, possibly like that.
Well, I'd throw out a hen pheasant. I think
they
probably look
too.
Pretty similar. So, I
mean, although you see that big long tail, or relatively long tail.
Well, not on the hen, not terribly long, but again, that would be something to just look at that image. Look up a hen pheasant. You know, there are remnant populations of ruff grouse. But
were you drinking?
That's a possibility. Yeah.
No, that's why we were like, what?
Look at a hen pheasant and some of the game birds.
Yeah, I say hen pheasant, quail, killdeer.
I like killdeer.
Young turkey. Just look if you have a bird book, or go online and just Google some of those images and take a look and see.
And thanks a lot for calling, Jessica. Appreciate it very much. Jamie Nack and David Drake, our guests, who are wildlife specialists from the University of Wisconsin Extension and the Department of Forest and Wildlife Ecology at the UW-Madison. I'm Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network. Thanks so much for joining us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here as we take a look at the world of wildlife with our guests, David Drake and Jamie Nack. Appreciate your calls at 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And boy, we're seeing lots of great photos up on our Facebook page. Jackie sent one. She said, this guy came right to my front door for a visit in West Bend. Is this a baby raccoon? And no, it's not a baby raccoon. It is a
groundhog, or people also refer to them as woodchucks, or they also refer to them as a lesser known term, whistle pigs. But it's a groundhog, or also called a woodchuck.
And here's Ryan, has a nice photo here. He says, I found this in my urban home garden about a month ago. Maybe a snapping turtle? Not certain. It looks like a
It looks
snapper
like a
to me.
Turtle.
Look at that head. Looks.
Yep. They've got the large prehistoric looking head, as Larry talked about, and then at the bottom of their top shell you can see kind of a jagged edge near the tail.
Yep. And so that definitely is a snapper. Here's Karen from Okano Falls up next. Hi, Karen.
Hello. I just saw a little bit ago over on C and Deer Lane up here in Okano Falls, a deer came across the road. I think it was a doe. It didn't have antlers, but it was a pretty good-sized doe. Then a little while down the street, I saw a turkey with 8 little gobblers. And then about 2 weeks ago in the Bear Creek area, I saw a doe with 3 fawns.
Wow.
So I guess I'd be interested in knowing how you said to get one of those forms to keep track of, because I see a lot of wildlife.
Hey, that's great. That's good news. So Okano Falls is the place to be right now.
Yeah.
So it's really easy to get the form. If you just do an internet search for the Department of Natural Resources, Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, and when you get to their homepage, they have a search box. And in that search box, if you type the words Deer Watch,
okay.
Yep, Deer Watch, there'll be all information on the procedures for conducting the survey. And then a form that you can print out and keep with you, and also a link that you can input your data electronically. And it is a very easy survey. There's just maybe 7 or 8 guidelines to follow in conducting the survey. And again, it's for August and September viewing.
Mm-hmm. There we go.
And is it just for deer, or is it for any kind of wildlife?
This particular survey is just for deer. If you're interested in other opportunities to help monitor Wisconsin's wildlife, type in the word citizen science, and you can get ideas on things from frog and toad surveys. There's a lot of different bird surveys that are going on. So lots of opportunity to participate and have your comments and time go into monitoring Wisconsin's wildlife.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Yeah, some really good ones out there, and take advantage for sure. Greg in Oregon, thanks for calling. Hi.
Good morning.
Morning.
Is it possible that I saw pelicans here in Dane County?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So big white birds?
Big white birds, yes.
Yep.
And I actually saw what I thought was a pelican in the town of Oregon here, and then in Sun Prairie, just outside of Sun Prairie.
On Patrick Marsh, right?
Okay, I thought it was unusual. Maybe it's not.
Oh, no. Was it on Patrick Marsh?
Yeah, the pelicans in Sun Prairie have been by the Patrick Marsh school and the namesake of the marsh. But, I see them quite well 2 times a day when they've been out there all spring and summer as I commute in. So,
Yeah. Yep, so those
I didn't know they know they came this far north.
Yep, those are white pelicans. And if you go further south down into Florida, there's brown pelicans, which are the endangered species. But they're a migratory bird, and they're fish-eating, obviously. So when there's ice in the lakes up here, they have no access to their food source and have to leave the state. But they are further north. They're up onto the into the Great Lakes, and actually the population is growing. So they're a pretty neat bird, and you can see them pretty commonly. So you see them around Horicon Marsh as well. And yeah.
And you'll see them as far north. At least I've seen them as far north as Saskatoon, Saskatchewan.
Yeah, yep,
there's
go.
Quite a large...
That's right.
A group of them flock? Is it flock? I'm not sure what the proper term is.
Pile of pelicans.
Yeah, a pile of pelicans. So they go, they get pretty far north. They get that far north.
Yeah, it's
so
neat to see them.
It's always fun to see them. Always. Thanks again, Greg. Wanda in Appleton, your turn. Hi, Wanda.
Hi. I have a question about foxes. I have noticed in the last 3-4 years that once in a while I'll see a dead fox on the side of the road, and it occurred to me that I have not noticed foxes, roadkill or alive, in a long, long time. And I'm just wondering, is it just a resurgence of the population in my area, in like Appleton, Waupaca, New London, this area, or is it generally across the state?
In terms of increasing fox numbers? So they seem to be, so foxes are, they're a harvestable species, and the population is doing well in the state, and it's also doing well typically in urban areas because these animals are starting to discover these urbanized areas provide a lot of very good habitat, and when you get into more urbanized areas, typically the primary source of mortality is vehicles that they are trying to cross those roads and unfortunately interact with the vehicles. And then as you get out into more of the rural areas, mortality may include natural predation from, again, coyotes or fox or something like that.
Sure.
It also might include some harvesting for the fur resource.
Should I report? I have a friend who's kind of in a rural area, and she has a mother fox who comes under her shed and has kits every spring.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, I'm encouraged by it. I'm very happy to know that the foxes are alive and well in our area.
Yeah, so I think if she doesn't mind having them there, I think that's a wonderful thing. And keep allowing them to den there and then just keep watching the growth of those fox families year after year.
Absolutely. Yeah, fun to know they're on the rise. I'm happy to hear that.
That's neat. Well, thank your friend for taking such good care of the foxes out there.
Yeah, thanks. And they're eating mice.
Yeah.
Yeah, lots predominantly of mousers, yeah.
Yep.
So they'll keep the mouse population down a little
bit
for you.
Yes, they will.
Absolutely. We have lots more callers here, and I did want to mention there's an event coming up. Before we go back to the phones, there's a few events coming up. One at Horicon Marsh, the Horicon Marsh Grand Opening on August 22nd.
Yeah, so the Horicon Marsh is a 33,000-acre wetland. It's the largest freshwater cattail marsh in America. And the southern part of that marsh, about a third of it, is owned by the state of Wisconsin, and the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources is unveiling their brand-new education and visitor center there. And it's roughly a $4 million project. Of about $1 million was generated by the Friends Group of the Horicon Marsh down there. And so on August 22nd, from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., they're going to have a public house and an open house there. And they've got some incredibly wonderful interactive displays in that museum or in that visitor center. And they've got mounts of animals, and they've got a display on glaciers and all sorts of other things like that. So they'll have some guided walks down there. Some of their biologists will be available to answer questions and guide you around. And if you're in the area, definitely go see it. It is a real beautiful facility down there.
And some other events that are coming up as well. Farm Technology Days, for example. You mentioned Sun Prairie. That reminded me. Oh, yep. We got Farm Technology Days that the UW...
UW Extension folks, yep.
Yeah, and that's the 25th through the 27th.
Coming up very quickly. It's the 62nd annual farm show. It's held in a different county with a Farm hosting the event this year. It's the Stotts Brothers in Sun Prairie. And yeah, if you have never been, it's worth going. And you don't have to be an active farmer to go. There's a lot of educational opportunities that go on there. So hundreds of exhibitors, lots of farm machinery that kids can climb and on. Sit behind the wheel. There's a lot of interactive displays. They do a bunch of seminars, you know, showing how equipment works and tours of the farm, that particular farm. But David and I will be there through those 3 days, the 25th through the 27th, and we're in the Progress Pavilion amongst other conservation organizations, agencies, and other UW Extension colleagues, both specialists and county agents. So we encourage you to come and say hi and introduce yourself to us and check out what we have on display, but check out some of the other excellent displays too. So the insect doctors and weed doctors and plant diagnostics and Master Gardeners is in that tent and Farm Service Agency.
Yeah, my favorite part of that is the plant specialist, the extension specialist. They ask for somebody to bring in the largest weed. And so you get these weeds that are 10 feet tall sometimes, and it's pretty amazing to see them.
And if you have a diseased leaf or something you want to bring in,
you can bring it in.
Perfect time
they
to
can
take
diagnose.
It.
Absolutely.
Yep, they can come up with it. You can bring in your drinking water to be tested on the spot. Yep. So it's a chance to kind of have the specialists and the county agents at your fingertips and be able to get some of those questions answered. So, and it's a lot of fun for us to interact with you as well.
With everybody. That's the 25th through the 27th Farm Technology Days. And we have more events to talk about. We'll be all at State Fair. We'll talk about that a little bit later on. We'll take a quick look at the news, weather, find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network, and then we'll be back with our guests. You stay with us. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio as we take a look at the world of wildlife with Jamie Nack and David Drake. Jamie, a wildlife outreach specialist in the Department of Forest and Wildlife Ecology at UW-Madison. David, also with the department, and he's a wildlife extension specialist as well. Really enjoy having them on, and certainly if you have questions or experiences to share, or maybe photos, if you have photos, we're getting some great ones up on our Facebook page. Just go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. You can post questions and or photos there. You can call us at 800-642-1234 and email us at talk@wpr.org. We were talking about some events and things that are coming up. And, hey, State Fair next week.
Yep.
Be there or be square.
That's right.
At the State Fair.
That's right. So we'll have the University of Wisconsin Extension Day at the Fair on Tuesday, August 11th, right? It's all day in the... what is it called? Central Mall area?
Yeah, Central Mall.
And so I know, Larry, you'll be there.
I'll be there from 2 to 4:30 for sure, and I'll be talking with a lot of people. We'll be up on the stage. There's a stage at the Central, in the Central Arena area, and they're going to be making sausage and showing how to do that, and you're going to be there.
Yep,
with...
I'll be there for in the morning. A colleague of mine will be there in the afternoon. Jamie is abandoning us for that day, but so you won't be able to see her her beautiful mug, but... you'll be able to see me and Scott Hingstrom, our colleague, if you want, and then a bunch of other people from the University of Wisconsin Extension System.
Yeah, and a lot of her, I mean, 4-H is going to be pretty active there.
Yep. Yeah, it'll be a lot of the same specialists that we talked about with Farm Technology Days and different topical areas from nutrition and the various sciences and agriculture technology. They'll have hands-on exploration stations, and I imagine David will be bringing some specimens from the department, some different pelts.
We'll bring the stuffed badger, so you get to see that if you want.
I'll bring Bucky. And,
that's right.
All right. So that, and I'm looking forward to that. That's next Tuesday, and runs, I think, from 9 until 5 or something like that, and I'll be there, I know, from 2 to 4. Patrick in St. Germain's been waiting a bit, so let's go to Patrick. Hi, thank you for calling.
Well, thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to share with you a couple experiences that I've had with wildlife. I live on a 25-acre wilderness lake. And I just last fall, I had we see pileated woodpeckers quite a bit here. And last fall, I had one land on the windowsill of our bedroom. And it was staring into the house, you know, must have been looking at the reflection or through the reflection on the window. And it just stayed there. And I know these are pretty much deep woods birds, and it was just amazing. It just stayed there and just kept looking into the house and then decided to fly away. And also, we have a pair of loons on the lake, and I've learned so much from observing wildlife. I can always tell when an eagle is in the area because mm-hmm. the loons will sound an alarm. And if the eagle lands close to the edge of the lake in one of the trees, the loons will actually swim towards the eagle, we've noticed, and signal that the eagle is present and where it is. So we've had some just wonderful experiences up here in St. Germain with wildlife.
Those are great stories, aren't they?
Yeah, it's northern Wisconsin and Minnesota, all those areas are just rich with the Northwoods wildlife. The loons, I mean, there's nothing better than seeing a pair of loons on a lake. Right now they have their young and they're more mobile, and you can see them, bald eagles as well. And it's just, I just love the call of the loon. It makes you feel like you're up north and in
falling
a different,
asleep to the call.
Yeah, a different state of mind, right. More relaxed. So, yeah, thanks for sharing, Patrick.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. I appreciate it. Oh, fun to see. Dan in Lake Poygan up next. Hi, Dan.
Hi. I hate to rain on anyone's parade, and I heard you guys talking about pelicans before.
Yeah.
And what you would call a group of pelicans. I live here on Lake Poygan, which is in east central Wisconsin, part of the Winnebago chain, and we've had pelicans here for, 15, 20 years at least, and we have a lot of them. And if I had to refer to a group of pelicans like a word, I would call them a curse of pelicans.
Are you a fisherman and angler?
Yeah, I'm a hunter and a fisherman, yep. And I am heavily involved in trying to restore and protect habitat on the lake. And when they first got here, oh, gosh, they were gorgeous, and we were all excited. And
yep.
By about 10 years ago or so now, There's a breakwall on Lake Butamore that's part of the Winnebago Comprehensive Management Plan, and it encircles about 680 acres of Lake Butamore near where the Fox River comes into Lake Butamore from the west there. And that the idea there was to make a lake within a lake where there would be clear water and good habitat for fish and waterfall and so on and so forth. And when it was first built, it worked beautifully. But by the time, about 10 years ago, the DNR counted 1,180 pelican nests on those rocks.
Oh, yep. Man.
And the urea from the pelican droppings turned the water inside that project to ammonia.
Yeah, which is too bad.
Yeah, there's another, relatively good-sized fish-eating bird. There's a number of fish-eating birds here in Wisconsin, but the other one that's kind of a love or hate type bird, depending on your perspective, are the cormorants. And cormorants and pelicans kind of will flock together, but they also are concentrated in large flocks. And if you are an angler, they're not your favorite bird because they can eat quite a few fish.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So for Dan, it's a curse of pelicans.
Curse of pelicans, that's right.
I'll have to look it up.
We'd have to look up what it is. Is it a flock of pelicans?
Yeah, I don't know.
It probably does have a unique collective name.
Well, there's so many kind of cool names for, a mob of crows, for example.
Murder
of crows. Yeah. What's a mob? There's a mob of something, isn't there? Murder of crows, you're exactly right.
Which is a great name for a group of animals, yeah.
I love that name. Dan, thanks for calling. Barb in Watertown, your turn. Hi, Barb.
Hello. You mentioned just before the news the new education center up at the Horicon Marsh. We happened to be up there just last week, actually, and it is just, I was totally amazed. It is so beautiful. There's something there for children all the way through adults, and if you want to get kids involved in nature, just take them there to look at the mounts they have at all the different birds, the native wildlife. It'll just truly blow your mind. It's definitely worth the trip.
Oh,
thanks, Barb. Yeah. Appreciate it. Yeah, definitely. They've got a wet lab. They do school group outings at the facility where you can, you know, kind of coordinate what lessons you want to have taught to the children. So, yeah, they do a lot of things. And of all, as you mentioned, as with audiences of all ages and different topics related to natural resources and the history of the marsh, which is very rich.
Yep, and absolutely. On August 22nd, of course, you're going to go and see the Visitor Center. But make sure you get out on the marsh, either drive through it or hike or something like that, because that is a real treasure.
There's a canoe trail on the marsh. There's pontoon rentals. There's, it's a pretty...
There's some
phenomenal.
Guided tours.
Yep.
Yeah.
But there's just some good walking. I mean, there are some wonderful paths
and easy walking.
Easy walking.
Yep.
I've done that many times, and it's really kind of inspiring.
Yeah, it is. Frankly. And obviously now we're going into the fall season, all the waterfowl migration, and that's one of the big reasons that Horicon Marsh is there is for the waterfowl migration. And that's a sight to see in the fall.
Oh, man, I guess. Marga in Chippewa Falls... Hi, thanks for calling.
Hello. I had an interesting summer so far with wildlife. I want to set the stage here by saying that I live in a small woods outside of Chippewa Falls, and I've been in the woods and marshes all my adult life. I'm 63, and in this woods we have, well, it's not our woods, but the woods that surrounds us, we've seen possum, coon, fisher, weasels, mink, red fox, gray fox, coyotes, wolves, bears, bobcat, deer, turkey, rabbits, and all birds and owls. But on July 7th, I came home at 3 in the afternoon after having left at 9 in the morning, and there'd been a bear on my bed. So kind of like the reverse of Goldilocks.
Oh, my goodness.
Did you actually see it?
No, I'll tell you what happened. I drove in. The garbage was tipped. The outside garbage was tipped over, and it was all dragged toward the woods. And I have an egress window in my bedroom, and it's like about 18 inches from my bed. And so I had the glass of the window open, and the screen was pushed in. It was bent. There was a bear track on my bed. There was like bear slobber on everything. But I figured that's kind of a narrow window. So I figured it was a yearling, you know, just got pushed out and kind of figuring out his way. And then a few days later, I heard a gunshot. And I thought, well, that doesn't sound good. And then a few days after that, this little yearling showed up again. He's probably about 75 pounds, you know, and he had a gunshot wound in his hip. And then I had heard that one of the neighbors fed him a peach because he was so cute. And I thought, okay, this isn't good for him to be in this neighborhood if he's going to come in a house and get fed and get shot. So the wildlife people put a trap in our yard for like 2 whole weeks. And he, you know, didn't come. So I said, you might as well come and get your trap. And so the guy said, okay, just shut the door. Well, I shut the door, and a couple hours later, here came this little bear. But he didn't do one thing wrong. I watched him, and he just walked through the yard and went right back into the woods. And so we let him take the trap, and I've seen him since then, and he hasn't done anything wrong, so...
Yeah, that's pretty neat. Yep. So those are yearling bears. Sometimes will get pushed out of their territories, and they're kind of trying to find their way across the landscape, and don't mean to get into any trouble, but they certainly do get into a lot of trouble, or they can. And so that's a pretty neat story.
Yeah, and one of the best things you can do, Marge, is just make sure you don't leave garbage. I'm sure they talked to you about this when they visited, but sharing that information with neighbors. Try to take down bird feeders if anybody's feeding the birds in that area right now. They don't really need us to feed them anyway, and that'll be an attractant for bears. Any garbage, make sure it maybe stays in a garage until it's time to put it out. Any other type of human food sources, dog or pet food that you might have outside, just make sure you clean up any attractants because they do have a pretty powerful sense of smell.
Yep, and they will come back once they find something they like.
Yeah,
right.
Absolutely. Including they might want to come back and visit your bedroom area, so be a little careful. Lee, thanks again, Marge, for calling. Appreciate the call. Lee in Green Bay, we turn to you next. Hi, Lee. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, good afternoon. I would like Jamie and David to comment on where have our frogs gone. I know it's a problem worldwide. I believe it's a fungus. But here you know, I've got property just north of Green Bay. I used to see the leopard frogs in the high grasses. You'd have a nice light rainfall in the evening or night, and they'd be hopping across the road. I don't see that anymore. Is it the detrimental farming practices with their herbicides and their pesticides? Is, you know, what's happening here locally with our frogs?
You know, I think there certainly is the disease, the chytrid disease, that's attacking some of the frogs, and that is can be a devastating disease depending on the population or the species, for example. Locally, it can take have a negative impact on that population. You know, there have been some issues with holes in the ozone layer and things of that nature that people have looked at in terms of mutating frogs. Sometimes, obviously, you know, we've got 12 frog species in Wisconsin. One of those is the toad. But sometimes, if the wetland has disappeared or wetland type habitats have disappeared in your area, frogs are reliant on those wetland habitats. They have to find someplace else to go, or they're going to die. And so that could be a possibility that maybe something in the landscape has changed. And then some of it is just, you know, as observant as we try to be, sometimes we miss things. And even though the population hasn't really changed noticeably, maybe we're just not out at the same time that the animals are, or whatever the case might be. That maybe doesn't sound like it could be your particular issue, because it sounds like you're pretty observant. But there could be a host of reasons. One thing you might want to do is the Department of Natural Resources in Wisconsin. They do the annual frog and toad survey. And you can call your local biologist and see if there's a survey route near you, and see if the index of frogs and toads that people have been reporting has changed, or that trend has changed. Are they seeing a decrease in their overall frog population, or an increase in the frog population, or is it holding steady? And so that you could at least put some data to some of your observations with that.
There we go. Thanks a lot for calling, Lee. We got a Facebook question from Jenny. I was following my friend to Oshkosh on Highway 45. We were talking on speakerphone as we drove along. Then all of a sudden, some type of animal ran across the road. She hit it a little bit, and then I ran over it a little bit. It looked like a wolf. It looked so big, I swear it was as long as the left lane of traffic. Of course, it was a full moon, so we thought it was a werewolf, sort of jokingly here. We saved some of the hair from her bumper. And apparently, the animal must have run off. So can we send it to someone to have it tested? Jamie, do you?
Well, there are facilities that, you know, the State Department of Natural Resources, researchers at UW-Madison that we use to submit samples like that for DNA evidence. Takes a while to get that information back. So nationally, those facilities exist. Whether an individual from the public can send a sample, I am not entirely sure. You could contact just through the DNR's call center, pose the question to them, and they could put it in the hands of the proper biologist to offer that and see if that person is interested in submitting the sample on their behalf based on the evidence or what they share and the location in the state. Or in some cases, they may just kind of let it go. There might not be enough reason to have the answer, I guess. So,
yeah.
But, you know, animals of that size, I mean,
I bet there's a testing lab somewhere she could pay for,
To have it done. Sure. Yep. And there's also, it's hard because you can't rule out a domestic animal, a domestic dog, and there are so many different breeds that by looking at the pattern of the fur, it would be difficult to distinguish between theirs. But genetically, they'd be able to do that. So, yeah, you can do a search online. You could contact the DNR and have them help direct it to the proper person.
So speaking of searches online, Cheyenne Lentz, our on-air producer, did a search online for what to call a group of pelicans. And,
oh, perfect.
And there are many collective nouns, including a brief of pelicans, pod of pelicans, a pouch.
Well, that makes some sense.
Yeah, of pelicans, a scoop.
Yep.
Of pelicans, and here's the one I have heard.
Yeah, me too.
A squadron of pelicans.
Which is, I think, most appropriate, because if you see those animals flying, they are flying like a squadron of airplanes in the sky, and it's pretty impressive.
Yeah, so that's a thank you, Cheyenne, for looking that up. That's great. So I'm going with squadron. I like squadron.
I'll second that.
A brief. I don't know why brief would
pelican
be
brief. Was that the who was the author who wrote that?
Oh, of course.
He wrote
oh my gosh, I interviewed him on my show.
Yeah, he's from Mississippi.
Yeah.
Anyway. He'll come to us as soon as we end the show.
Squadron of Pelicans. Let's go there. Dennis and Appleton. Hi.
Hi. We are up in Marinette County, and we have seen doe this year, but we have not seen any fawns yet. Is that the fawn population down this year?
Well, I just returned from northern Wisconsin, and we saw a number of does and fawns. You know, it can depend. You know, the local population can be, you know, variable. So just in terms of where you're looking, I don't know how far you've traveled this particular summer or the last couple of months. If the doe has late-born fawns or they were born more recently, she may still be hiding them and not really having them attend with her. So you might not see the fawns. She still may be concealing them and going back to them to nurse. In a few more weeks, if they are a later fawn, they'll be more observable as they've put on some weight and are more adept at escaping predators, and they'll be with her more often. So in the next couple of weeks, perhaps, you'll see more does with fawns kind of at their side. This last week when we saw a doe, we kind of just pulled over and watched her for a while, and you could see by the way she was moving her ears behind her that there was obviously something, and we assumed it was a fawn, and we just waited a few minutes and the fawn came up and joined her. So if you just watch the animal for a while, its behavior can give you an indication on whether there may be a fawn present that you're just not seeing.
Okay, all right. And in Mob, isn't that a group of talk show hosts?
Yeah, that would be it. Get myself and Kathleen and Joy and a bunch of us together. We'd be a mob.
Yeah.
For sure.
Thanks, Dennis.
Thanks, Dennis. That's good. I like that. Tom and Rhinelander. Hi, thanks for calling.
Hi. We live on a 135-acre lake with no public access, and we have loons on the lake in May and June. They kind of leave this time of the year. And I've seen and read about making a loon island. What are your guys' thoughts on that, and if you need a permit or anything like that?
Okay, we got about a minute to go. So.
Yeah, so you can make what's called loon platforms, and because loons will nest on top of hummocks of vegetation that's in the lake. And so a loon platform, they'll bring nesting material to that and nest on it. And in terms of needing a permit, I am not sure about that. So check with your local conservation warden for the DNR and see if you need a permit
now,
for that.
Now, that platform, is it way up in the air?
No, it's rafted on the water, and it's anchored to the bottom so it doesn't move.
And the advantage of having the loon platform in the middle of the water is it keeps raccoons and skunk and possum and some of the predators from finding them along the shoreline. So
plus, you can set that platform wherever you have good viewing, and you can watch the loons nesting from your house. It's a beautiful, enjoyable sight.
Oh, so Tom, look into that. Sounds like fun project. I like that idea, and I like the fact you guys stopped by again. Thank you so much. You'll be back again.
Yep, we will be in the fall.
In the fall, and we'll do this all over again. August,
October, right? Yeah.
Yep.
October, first Wednesday of October.
Yep, that's right.
Thank you so much, guys. David Drake and Jamie Nack are guests today from the Department of Forest and Wildlife Ecology and the UW Extension. Great to have them along. And they'll be back again, and I'm looking forward to it already. Tomorrow at 11, we will talk with Bassam Shakashiri. Haven't seen him in a while. It's going to be great. He's going to be talking about the recent Summer Science Forum at the UW-Madison and some upcoming science events. And then we'll talk about mushrooms this time of the year and their many uses. In the meantime, stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.